Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Well, it's a no-race post-race podcast. Of course, you'll all be aware by now that the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix in Imola this weekend was called off by Formula One amidst the flooding disaster that is going on in the region and devastating parts of northern Italy. The main priority has to be safety, of course, not just for the people travelling and working within F1, but it would be quite simply irresponsible to put on an event that required emergency services and recovery vehicles to be diverted away from any flood relief efforts for the local people in the area. So, no racing, but we've still got some things to talk about. My name's Harry Benjamin. Callan O'Keefe is here, as always. And Callan, although, we were looking forward to Imola, obviously, everyone's made the right call here, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think, obviously, we all echo the sentiments that have been pushed around on social media recently, where we just hope that the people affected by the flood are obviously managing it the best they can, and definitely the right call from the sport. And, you know, on a slightly lighter side, it obviously means that Nick de Vries isn't going to be tagged as the worst performer of the weekend on the WTF1 post-race podcast. So he's safe for another week, isn't he? And you know how much I love Nick.
Well, about that, I still think he was a bit of an underperformer this weekend. A DNS is just not good enough as far as
I was going to say this 100%. I was like, you're still going to pick Nick, aren't you? You're still going to pick him as the worst performer of the weekend. Give him a chance.
Okay.
He did a great job on the travel, 100%. I know.
Great job on the travel.
He managed his timing. He got to the airport on time. Everything was efficient. So, you know, we can't single him out just yet.
No, not yet. Well, you know, not long until Monaco. So there we go. Well, Nick de Vries survives this week on not being on the bottom of the podium ladder. But as usual, Cal and I are not alone this week. Presenter and host of the Red Bull Racing F1 podcast, Talking Bull, Nicola Hume is here. Now, contractually, she can only say positive things about Red Bull. So welcome back, Nick.
Hey, babies.
What a great weekend for Red Bull.
It's been a really great weekend for Red Bull.
Well, speaking of Red Bull's sister team, obviously AlphaTauri, based in Faenza, just a few kilometres really from Imola and in the Emilia-Romagna region, affected quite badly. Yuki Tsunoda lives there, and he was out on the streets helping clean up. Nick de Vries was getting stuck trying to make his way back home as well. He was in a hotel that became a bit of a refuge area for the emergency security services and helping people get away from the flooding. So, I mean, what a weekend.
I mean, hats off to both of them, and hats off to anyone that sort of helped out with the flooding situation over there. Because, I mean, the pictures... It's so upsetting seeing some of the pictures. It was absolutely the right call to call off the race, etc. But Yuki has my heart and my soul. I love him so much. Although I feel like if this was a couple of years ago, that totally would have been Seb. Seb would have jumped in and done the same thing. Even if he wasn't based around the area, he would have hung around to help out. That is such a classic Seb thing to do, isn't it?
I'm kind of surprised Seb wasn't there, to be fair. That's the kind of thing he would do, exactly. You can just imagine Seb getting on a plane and going and helping out, because he's just that kind of guy, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's such a shame. And also, I think it's a real shame, because I was looking forward to chatting to you guys about the race and hearing Harry have a go at the full official title for the race this weekend, which was what, Harry?
What, you mean the Formula One Qatar Airways Gran Premio del Made in Italy e dell'Emilia Romagna?
Oh, he's been practicing.
Oh, he's a modern day professional.
It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? I think that is the officially, I don't want to put my hand on the line and say that is the longest title ever. I don't think it is. There's probably something longer. I feel like the one that they did in Mugello a couple of years ago had a very similar longish title. But this one has the most different kind of countries in it. Qatar, Italy, Emilia, Romagna. All it's missing is a bit of Imola. And then you've got the full list there, really. But no, we didn't get a Grand Prix, but for obvious good reason. I think there's some esports stuff maybe going on. Max Verstappen is organizing something with a bunch of, well, he does his Team Redline stuff with a few support drivers too. But no Imola. Yuki gets driver of the day, obviously, for being out on the streets. And Ferrari and F1 donating €1 million to the course. Formula One setting up a donation service as well.
Amazing.
To the local area. So doing their best. And the teams were allowed back in, having been sent away on the Wednesday, I think it was. They were allowed back into the paddock to pack up things, because it's not that long until we go to Monaco. In fact, they'll go probably straight there and head to the south of France, which is where we go next. But the thing is, Callan, with Monaco, I mean, you've raced around there and we all know it's tight, it's twisty, it's not a testing track, and it's not ideal for overtaking, really. And the main thing about Imola was that this was going to be the first of the big races where we saw the upgrades come. Mercedes in particular were going to bring a whole, basically, well, as close as they could to a new car. They got side pod, front suspension, bits and bobs like that. They are apparently still going to bring that and introduce it into Monaco. But what's the point? Is it going to work?
I mean, that's the other thing, isn't it? All the simulation, all the money they spend trying to correlate these upgrades to... They don't know whether they're going to work if they put them on the car in real life. And to not have that opportunity to be able to run them at a proper race circuit to understand whether or not this is the path that the teams want to develop the cars is a massive headache for them. And as you said, Monaco is not really a place. Formula One cars are massively based around aerodynamic and aerodynamic efficiency. That's where we always talk about it, don't we? How can you make the car as fast as you possibly can in a straight line, but also as fast in the high-speed corners, because that's where they make the difference. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of head scratching. And actually, I'm quite excited for Monaco, because I think there's going to be a lot of work with the teams trying to understand actually whether or not they've taken a step, or whether or not they're just giving themselves false hope by developing the cars in this direction. And yeah, Monaco is an immense driver challenge, and one of those places where the drivers have to get up to speed as well. So we're going to be seeing teams fighting against whether or not their cars are better, but also how quickly can their drivers get up to speed to maximize that track's time to see if the developments are there.
Yeah, well, it's not long, as I say. But Ferrari had planned a new rear suspension. They've delayed that to Spain now, which seems like the more sensible choice. AlphaTauri, we're going to bring a new four. Alfa Romeo bringing major tweaks as well. But, I mean, the upgrades are just some of the fallout from Imola being cancelled. But, Nick, the other one is, obviously, will we get Imola again this year? Can it be rescheduled, do you think?
Right. Well, this is what I've been trying to work out, right? So I've been looking at my... my Formula One calendar. And I'm trying to think, where is the option here to potentially put it in another space? And the only option, I think, is to put it around the Hungary race. But then at that point, you've literally got like 4 or 5 weeks of races on the trot, which will just be too much. But apart from that, I don't see how you can put it anywhere else in the calendar that would make sense. I mean, apart from if you maybe go slightly ahead of Texas, but that would just be completely bonkers to go from Imola to Texas.
Surely
I don't know. It's just unless they put it at the end or they just completely cancel it, I don't know how it's going to work. Maybe that's the finale.
Well,
maybe Abu Dhabi happens and that's lovely, and then you have a big finale at Imola. Would that work?
It would
in
be
December.
A nice classic rustic race to end on, wouldn't it? But I mean, you're right, because there is a week between Silverstone and Hungary in July, but then it would be Austria, Silverstone, Imola, Hungary, Belgium.
Yeah,
that's five back to back to back to back. That they can't possibly do that. Plus,
I
imagine people have already booked time off and all this kind of stuff. And then you've got the summer break after Belgium, so you can't do anything then. And then there isn't. And then you've got the flyaways, but you can't be flying back and forth like that. I mean,
you're right about holiday, about, you know, members of staff booking holiday. You know, some might have booked a week at Centre Parks. Now they're going to be fuming.
I've got a family barbecue during the week between Silverstone and Hungary. So
it's not fair.
I can't
let your family
down.
Can
you guys stop bragging about having friends and plans? I was just sat here going, you know what? Why not? It can't be that difficult to organise another Grand Prix, can it? It's not like it's a huge logistical nightmare to fly somewhere else, is it? So, and then you guys have to add fuel to the fire by bragging about having plans and friends. It just hurts. Being sat here, it just hurts. Okay, and I think obviously, going back to it as well, Formula One, it just, everyone knows what a huge logistical, it's a huge sport. There's a lot of there's a lot of teams, a lot of personnel. And I think to fly back and forth in between, I've got a couple of friends that work in Formula One, and obviously I do a bit myself as well. And to fit it in would be borderline impossible. Would probably better just to leave it off. And we come back next year hoping for another race of chaos and a race that actually happens.
Actually, the other thing though, Callum, that you might be a good person to know about this is that obviously supporting Formula One this weekend was Formula Two, Formula Three. And there was talk about the cost cap, about Formula One too, and how does this affect the cost cap? Because that was set initially a 24 race schedule. Then we lost China. Now we've lost Imola. How's that going to work? But equally, I imagine, you know, for the F3 and the F2 drivers as well, who are paying, you know, they've probably come up with this a deal, maybe race by race. They've now lost a whole round. How does that affect them?
Yeah, I think the one thing with F2 and F3 is the drivers are suffering from such limited track time. When you get to that, you know, let's call it the top of the triangle when you're looking to get to Formula One, these guys have restricted testing. You normally get between 4 and 6 days a year of official testing. So the track time is so valuable for these young drivers' development. To then have it where we have a race cancelled, I think there'll probably be a fight with obviously getting a bit of money back from all the drivers. I know a couple of drivers have already inquired, obviously, because if you don't race, exactly. I think it's a lot of the drivers, I spoke to them, and they're more concerned about the lack of track time because everyone is trying to build off of Baku if you're in F2, and everyone is trying to build off the last F3 race where, you know, we're in May now, and we've had very limited track time, especially with the F3 drivers. We're trying to build what we're doing, understanding the tie, especially for the rookies, and you know, continuing that momentum. If we now have another long break, miss an opportunity to get on track, it kind of hinders their development and just puts a bit of a marker, doesn't it, of what they're doing. So especially now, as you mentioned, we've got Monaco next. It's the first time back for the F3 cars there in a while since we had GP3 for a similar kind of category of car. And yeah, I think that's going to be a real challenge for the drivers without having Imola to kind of bed themselves back in again after the last race.
I do have to ask, do we know if there's any damage that's been done with regards to the F2 stuff? Because the images that I saw online was that part of their paddock was pretty much underwater. It looked like lorries were kind of stuck and all that sort of thing. Do we know the amount of damage that's gone on there for the F2 guys?
I think that's probably a question you ask a few days after everyone's managed to get themselves out and the kind of recovery and everything has happened when everything's settled down. So I'll make it my job to find out, because I think it's actually a really good point, isn't it, Nicola? That, you know, we're now going straight to Monaco. If there has been damage, and F2 teams, they're huge enterprises. They don't run to a Formula One budget, but it's a very impressive operation. If you see the amount of people, personnel, you know, a lot of the teams are using AI as well. So there's a lot of stuff that can get damaged, isn't there? So I will make it my mission over the course of the weekend, now that we have some time, to find out really which teams have been affected, if any, and, you know, see if that is going to affect any of the drivers over the course of the year.
I mean, even just down to some lorries breaking down where they've got stuck in the water, that can really affect things, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, across the world of motorsport, yeah, spare parts, tires, everything. Yeah. We're very strained at the moment, especially in the junior formula. You know, we had it last year in F4. There was a shortage of Pirelli tires because drivers are using so much for testing, and obviously everything that's the world doesn't just revolve around Formula One, doesn't it? There's lots of stuff going on in the world that affects Formula One, and it's very easy to forget sometimes that there's bigger issues behind that can have an effect on it.
Yeah. Round one of the Porsche Super Cup didn't get going either. So, you know, that happened.
I'd say that's a car with a roof. We don't talk about that in this podcast.
Unless you have a convertible, you know.
Well, yeah. that's the second category. there was supposed to be a new tyre qualifying format tested, though, as well this weekend. It's going to be the first of trial of a new tyre allocation, and those rules aimed at improving sustainability in Formula One, which is basically a reduction in sets available from 13 to 11 for each driver. And then in terms of qualifying, that was going to sort of be shown by the drivers being forced to use specific compounds in each qualifying. So Q1, they'd have to use the hard, Q2, the medium, and Q3, the soft. And that was basically going to ensure the teams were left with more race option sets as well, so we could maybe spice up strategy options come the race. And it was going to be the first test. Callan, how do you think that would have played out? I mean, does that sound on the face of it, you know, having one compound attire for each qualifying section, leaving them with maybe more possibilities? Do you think that will work? Do you think the format needs changing? Because if anything, within Formula One right now, I think qualifying is still probably the fine. Like, it's good, it's entertaining. We all know where we're at.
First of all, I'm going to, a little disclaimer here. I'm not really the one to talk to about sustainability. So I don't understand the sustainability implications of it. I'm just, you know, classic idiot racing driver. So I always look at the performance aspects of what's going on. So don't quote me on sustainability, anything like that. It may be a massive improvement in terms of sustainability, which obviously we're all striving for in the sport because, you know, as we already said, massive logistical costs. Formula One can be, yeah, like there's bigger issues around Formula One than just the Grand Prix, isn't there? So, but in terms of performance, I quite like the ideology of not being locked to a specific tire, because what it does do is it creates excitement. Because if you're on the edge of getting into Q3, if you're on the edge of getting into Q2, or equally, if we go to a track where there's massive track evolution, for example, like a street circuit, the way that the teams use the tire is so critical to understanding qualifying and maximizing the track positioning for Sunday. And I don't really think it's going to make a difference in the races, because unfortunately, Formula One cars are massively aero-dominant cars. And with aero comes turbulent air when you follow, and that makes it very difficult to pass. So I think we're more likely to be able to see chaotic races if cars can be out of position by maximizing their qualifying strategy rather than utilizing more tires in the race. Because I think teams have got so much simulation, they've got so many people that they've already got a handle under deck, really, and how the tire behaves. We need the drama to happen on Saturday to create drama on Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I still think that if they're fiddling with everything at the moment, Nick, right? And I just think that if you're going to fiddle with qualifying, just go hard, make it one shot qualifying.
Yeah, they are fiddling with everything, aren't they? Because they want to make the races a bit more dramatic, because a lot of the races at the moment just seem to be like one stop simple strategies, and people are finding it a little tad boring, if you will, if there's just going to be one pit stop, or if all the drivers are going to end up doing exactly the same strategy, etc. So I see what they're trying to do. I can see what they're attempting to do to get a bit of wear out of the tyres during qualifying. So then when it comes to the actual race, then maybe the options will be slightly different. Then you might have to consider two stops, etc. But I don't know if that's the way to do it. I think maybe certain races you have to implement, this has to be a two-stop or something like that would be the best way to make it a little bit more dramatic in the race rather than playing around with qualifying, is my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. I think that people at the moment think the racing is limited by the tyre choices and the tyre strategies, which we love a bit of tyre talk, don't we? Which maybe, you know, if you say, okay, it's minimum mandatory two stops. But the other thing, right, and I keep thinking this, you know, they brought in these new regulation changes last year. It's going to really flip the order. And yeah, you saw Aston Martin make a really big jump. And okay, it is tight in the midfield. But I still don't feel like they got what they wanted out of it. I haven't got, Callan, what I wanted out of these new regulations, and I'm not happy about it. I don't think they've really worked, to be quite frank. I think we should have certain parts of the cars that should be spec, and that way you're not having midfield teams occasionally fighting tooth and nail for a point. You're getting Yuki Tsunoda getting P4 when he earns P4.
Well, when you become the FIA pro, the standard FIA president, when the FIA call themselves to the FIA, we've discussed this many times, you're going to take over at some point. You can implement that rule. But I think, again, you know, adding a little bit of experience of what we have in the junior formula, where obviously we have less people. I'm not comparing, you know, F3 and F2 to Formula One, but we have spec parts there, and you still see difference in teams, because at the end of the day, you know, the margins are so small in motorsport. And if you can squeeze out half a tenth at 10 corners, that's the difference between making yourself look dominant and making yourself, you know, be in the fight with the others. So it's a very complicated one with the ideology of just go, well, all spec parts going to create racing. I think we have to understand what are the limiting factors of what stops racing and what limits a Sunday. So we've already mentioned tires. We mentioned the fact that it's very difficult to follow. And I think we were promised this amazing, oh, it's going to be so much easier to follow now, there's going to be so much more racing. But, you know, it hasn't really materialized, as you said. So if I could, you know, put myself in your shoes, Harry, and become the standard FIA president for the day, I would look at potentially reducing the amount of downforce the cars have, you know, relying more on mechanical grip that would make it far easier for the cars to follow. And if we can make it easier to follow, we would create more, you know, exciting racing because it would give more possibilities and the drivers would be able to do more. At the moment, the drivers follow, they destroy the tire, then they have to back off because they can't follow. And then obviously it falls into a bit of a procession. So easy to say that sat here in a Premier Inn in Norwich when I'm not engineering Formula One cars. When I'm not engineering Formula One cars and have very little engineering experience, but that would be where I would look. And I know Formula One is trying, but it's just going to take a bit of shaking out. And hopefully we can, with the current regulations we've got, hopefully the teams can kind of understand that they can use the huge resources they've got to make it easier to follow and we can have great races and more to talk about on this amazing podcast.
Yeah. That was a hell of an answer. Can't lie. That was a hell of an answer, Callan. Very nice.
Can you beat that or not? No.
No. I've got nothing to add to everything that he's just said. I was just listening going, that's, yeah, love that. Yeah. Love that for you.
If you keep talking enough, eventually something you say makes sense. That's what I've worked off of for the last 26 years. So it's nice to know it's finally come true.
All I wanted to pick up from that was that I think I've actually stayed in that Norwich Premier Inn before. And so I know what you're going through.
Well, what I'll do this weekend, we've got a couple of drivers out in F4 here at Snetterton. What a lovely place, the stars of the future. So when we work out, because it's even something we talk about here, you know, we do our qualifying and then we have a driver that qualifies mid-pack and you talk to them about, and it's something that maybe, you know, the people are hopefully interested in listening. And if they're not, then please switch yourself off for the next 2 minutes while I waffle on about it.
But when a driver's
following behind another car, obviously we have turbulent air. And, you know, even from a young age, when they're 14, 15 and F4 level where the downforce isn't as much, we talk to them about how you cross the dirty air and how they drive. You can never run in the wheel tracks of another car ahead. So you're always trying to look for clean air to go over the car, because obviously when you're following, warm air comes off the car. Warm air is less dense and it creates less downforce. So there's a fact and a nice little statistic. If you're sat at the pub watching Formula One next time and you see someone turning a bit earlier when they follow, you can go, oh yeah, they're trying to get themselves away from the dirty, turbulent air. And that's why they're doing that. And then you can make yourself sound like a pro.
See, that is why he's here, because he knows what he's talking about. Me and Harry are here for absolutely no reason.
They couldn't find anyone else. That's the other reason I'm here. What do you think about turbulent air, Harry?
Harry. It's bad and we should not have it. Well, actually, these bloody regulations were designed to minimize that and if not get rid of it, and has it done that? In the last couple of Grand Prix we've had drivers like Sainz said it in Baku, you know, it's hard to follow, and that's red flag alarm bells. That was the whole point of these regulations.
You're getting a bit ranty, Harry.
Sorry. Look, I all right, we'll leave it there, but you know how I feel about this. Let us know if you feel the same. But coming back to the qualifying tire strategy thing, that obviously didn't happen. That is still going to happen though. They are going to test this new tire rule in Hungary over a month's time. So you know, do you think the format needs changing? Let us know. Are you happy with qualifying? Do you think it's actually the race that still needs tinkering with? Do we want all the sprints and stuff? Do we need to bother qualifying? We'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We'll get back to the show in just a moment, but first a quick word about our partners at MoneyGram. We live in a world that's more digital than ever, with nearly every want or need just a tap away. And so many of our favourite digital services seamlessly meet the physical world when they're delivered to your front door. But until now, that hasn't been true for crypto. Digital currencies have been tied up online with no easy way to bring them into the real world. That's why we're so excited to share that you can now cash in and out of select digital wallets at participating MoneyGram locations without a bank, credit card, or debit card. Convert your digital currency to cash and back again using the only digital wallets with real cash access activated by MoneyGram. Learn more at moneygram.com/stellarwallets. That's moneygram.com/stellar. That's STELLAR wallets.
So those are sort of the key things, the fallout really from Imola being cancelled. The other things though going around this weekend, there was still some other news outside of Imola, Nicola, and well, do you fancy going to Finland for a Grand Prix?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think
so. Come on, Bottas. Yes. Well, because I saw a headline as well saying that he doesn't plan on going anywhere anytime soon. And I'm more than happy for him and his Tash and his mullet to hang around, because what a legend that dude is. I love Bottas. Got a lot of time for that guy. I think he's an incredible driver. I think he's very, very talented. I think he has been struggling with a car this year. And it would be amazing if he can get a race in Finland and just feel totally at home on his own turf. I think he will just completely fly in that Alfa. He will.
Yeah, I think, well, you've got to be careful how much you big up another driver, Red Bull Nicola, because they'll be on you.
Yeah, Red Bull Nicola.
I'm allowed to say that drivers are good, but I mean, what can I say? It's everyone's great, but Red Bull 1-2 at the moment. Do I need to say any more?
That is true.
Well, they may be 1-2, but they don't have drivers that have impeccable mullets and moustaches. Like, can we just appreciate the growth of Valtteri?
Years.
Well, yeah. He's still got time, hasn't he? Can we just appreciate the growth of Valtteri Bottas? I mean, just what an absolute hero he's become since he's just kind of come out of his shell a little bit. Everyone talks about the mullet. Everyone talks about the moustache. No one talks about the cycling tan. Now, the next time you see a photo of Valtteri Bottas, look at the tan from the Lycra. And it is impeccable because it's so cut off at the arms and the legs. And it's like a badge of honor in cycling. But the guy's just become an absolute hero. And, you know, we actually, again, going back to the Grand Prix in Finland, I like the idea of going to tracks that teams haven't been to before, because that's another way of spicing up the racing, isn't it? If we can go to tracks where they haven't been doing loads of testing, they haven't been going for the last 30 years, and they're a little bit different. There are, you know, especially if we could mix it up and we could potentially put them at different times of the year, especially the first few years, what we could see is a bit of action, a bit of shaking up. And there was actually a world karting championship in Finland a few years ago. And they had this amazing track for anyone that has a spare 5 minutes, which obviously everyone has this weekend. It was this amazing track with like a roller coaster in the background. I can't remember the name of it, but it was so fast and so dangerous that drivers didn't actually want to race it. And I think that embodies everything that Finland is. It's just a bit loose, isn't it? So I've never seen this place before, and I really should have done some research looking into it. But if it's anything like that, we are set for, you know, a proper Formula One. So Valtteri, I know you listen to this podcast. Take some time off the bike, take some time, you know, being an absolute hero and basically being Australian, and please make it happen.
You are right about the tan line. I'm just stalking his Instagram.
It's so good.
When he wears a tank top, you can see it. You can.
What a legend. Yeah. He definitely has come into his own since he's stopped playing second fiddle at Mercedes.
He's come out the corporate machine, hasn't he?
Yeah. It's like he's just completely there to have an amazing time and just enjoy himself. And you can tell every step of the way, every time he turns up to a race, every interview you see, he's just... What a guy. Mm.
I think dating a cyclist has done that to him. And I'm going, you know, me and Valtteri do have something in common there. Cyclists are a bit loose. And I think that's the key thing here. So if I can...
Another flight for
when they come back in, it's like, oh yeah, I was on a country road today. My girlfriend, she rides bikes, obviously. And she'll come back in and she'll be like, oh, I was on a country road today. And I did a descent and I got to 90 kilometers an hour or whatever it is, 80 kilometers an hour. And you're like, on that. And you point at the road bike and she's like, yeah, you know, I wish I'd gone a bit faster. And you're like, okay, this is where we're seeing the influence of Valtteri. And again, let's see where he goes. We're still in the early stages. That's the glory of this. We're going to see an absolute chaotic Valtteri Bottas in the next few months. And I can't wait to see it.
Well, I hope his set, the Alfa Romeo, picks up some pace, because right now he's not looking like he can score any points. This is the Kimi ring, by the way, that we're talking about. And don't want to burst the bubble, but Bottas has only had some preliminary talks with them. And the Kimi ring kind of is basically falling apart. It's bankrupt, essentially. It was capable of hosting F1 and MotoGP. In fact, it was even on the MotoGP calendar for this year, but then it all fell through. He said... Bottas saying, you know, it's just talks at the moment, but you know, with all the amazing history of Finnish drivers in Formula One, it's amazing this hasn't happened sooner. You know, Kimi Raikkonen, Mika Hakkinen, not to mention Valtteri Bottas still on the grid currently. Finland has not hosted a world championship level motorbike race this is since 1982 at the Imatra Street Circuit. So that was the last time I think they hosted a world championship level kind of race. They were also doing, I think, like Nitro Rallycross and stuff like that, but that all fell apart as well, along with the Kimi Räikkönen going bankrupt. So let's see. Hopefully Valtteri Bottas can be the savior. Of course, though, you know, this year we were going to have 24 races. So where does that slot in? Well, we're going to go up to the 25th of December, are we?
Well, we're going to have some midweek races. It's the only way to do it now, isn't it? Wednesday night.
I'd be down for that, you know.
Can I throw my hat in the ring here and just say as well, while we're on the topic of new places, that'd be really good to go. Completely unbiased, but what about a Grand Prix in South Africa? You know, I've been getting hurt for the last 10 years because I keep hearing things where I'm like, oh, we're going to go. It's going to be a street race in Cape Town, or it's going to be a Kailami. And then guess what? It never comes through. So please can we have a race in South Africa? I just really want one. I would love to see a race. I'd love to see a race in Africa. I'd love to see a race in South Africa as well. We got so much passion for it and so much enthusiasm for motorsport. And again, we need more races. There's not enough races on the calendar, Formula One. FIA, listen to the podcast. So
that's 52 weeks of the year, guys. I mean, come on.
Exactly.
There should be 52 races at the bare minimum.
You're so lazy.
Why do people complain about needing time off? Formula One is easy. It's literally
they only
just
work weekends.
They just run around in circles. It's not that hard, is it?
Not that hard. Lewis Hamilton is very supportive of having a race in South Africa, and I think as a market, they really should be in that part of the world. Obviously, there is Kyalami, which does hold some GT racing, I think. I don't think it needs some work being done to it, I think, to make it a grade one level. Or whatever the level is to host a Formula One race, but
street race in Cape Town. Street race in Cape Town. For the sending the lovely people in the direction of something to watch. If you haven't, the last lap of the Formula E race this year in Cape Town was absolutely awesome. The move that Antonio pulled to win the race was ridiculous. So why not a street race in Cape Town? Let's put it out there. And then if we really want to get tricky with it, we can put it at night. Why not?
Oh, you know, anything. I'm all for everything turning every race into a night race. I think Baku under the lights, I just think that would look so cool. I think if I was the FIA president, I would be a bit on the button being like, yep, night race, let's do it.
Anything is cooler in the dark.
Miami,
anything
night race. Yeah, absolutely. That would look great.
Is Vegas a night race? It is, isn't it?
Yes. And it's on like the Saturday as well. So
yeah, it's really random.
Yeah, because I think they want to try and make it as bearable for the majority of the TV audiences as possible in terms of when it's on. Well, we'll see if Finland comes onto the calendar. We're actually going to do later on in the year a whole WTF1 podcast dedicated to why Formula One should be racing in South Africa. So I think Callan's already signed up for that one. Might even be able to get the legend that is Jody Scheckter onto the show as well.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm sure he's got a few things to say about that. But let us know. Finland on the calendar. Do you fancy it? I do. Why not? Speaking of races, this might be a good segue. Formula One obviously has an incredible, rich history. Traditional circuits on the calendar, like Imola, like Monaco, Belgium. And obviously we go to Monaco next. Do we want to see less of the traditional races that perhaps don't provide as much racing action in favour of new places like Finland, like South Africa?
Who wants to tackle that one? Because I will happily tackle
this one.
Go on,
Nick. You tackle it.
Go on, Nick. It's all yours.
Okay. I get bored of Monaco.
Oh, no. No, I take it back.
It's an awesome circuit and the history behind it and the drama and everything around it. And I know that it's a street circuit and sometimes it gets a little bit exciting. But the thing is as soon as you land pole in Monaco, you're going to win Monaco. Let's be honest.
Unless you're Charles Leclerc.
It's just one. Oh. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that would hurt me.
Yeah, bless him. But it's one of those races that you just kind of go, oh, just... It would be nice if we had another just really awesome track instead of Monaco, just for a few years, just for a couple of years of maybe, if they can get a track that's going on in South Africa, if they can get a track that's going on in Finland that runs on that weekend in Monaco. But it's, I mean, it's money though, isn't it, Monaco?
That's not Monaco though. Like, let the drivers have some. There is no driving challenge like Monaco. It is,
No one cares what the drivers think, Callan. It's about us. Sorry.
you're right. Sorry, I'll shut up. That's it. Well, I've been put in my box. What I was going to say was, Monaco is, you can't describe the feeling of racing. I know the street circuits are cool, like Baku and everything, and I've never raced there, but thankfully I've somehow wrangled my way into being lucky enough to race there. And it is so cool. When you go under the tunnel for the first time, even as a junior driver racing in the lower categories, it's the best feeling in the world. You've got track evolution. The walls are close. Like, Formula One cars are miles too quick for Monaco. Even the cars that I raced a Formula Regional around the Regional F3. It's too quick for Monaco. But it's such a good driver's challenge. And I think we need to keep when you're a kid growing up and you want to be a Formula One driver, you look at the main races, don't you? The ones you want to win. And there's always Monaco on the list. And if we get rid of those races, like, what's the kid going to look up to? You know, the ultimate driving challenge in Monaco, or potentially a track that's trying to establish itself, because you want to add yourself to the list of greats that have won. You want to add yourself to the Sennas and people like that. So please, can we not get rid of Monaco? Can we choose another race? I'm all for new tracks.
I'm just saying, right? Just hear me out, right? All I'm saying is, I know as a driver, it must be awesome as a challenge to drive that circuit. But as a race, it just, as a race, the drama just isn't as exciting as you want it to be, because you can't really overtake that often. And it doesn't make the race that exciting when it comes to overtakes and things like that. It's the street circuit that's awesome fun for the drivers. For everyone else that's a part of it, you kind of go, oh, well, it's Monaco. There we go. Of course, you're going to win it.
Can we get Nick in a car around Monaco? Can we make this happen? Do we have the power to make it happen? Yeah, come on, Red Bull. She only says good things. Put her in the Red Bull. Make it even for everyone else. Put her in the car for the weekend.
You see what I'm saying?
I do 100%. And I think that's part of that's Formula One, one of the biggest issues with Formula One is the fact that obviously for the majority of fans, you don't see the little details, do you? You watch cars driving around. And if I want to understand how good a footballer is, I go into my back garden, I kick a football, and very quickly realize that I'm not Lionel Messi, because I can't do what they can do. You know what I mean? And it's very difficult with Formula One, because there's no real reference point for someone to, I drive my road car. Well, it's not the same. Oh, well, I've been rental karting. It's not the same. Do you know what I mean? It's very difficult for those little intricacies to be appreciated about what the drivers are going through in terms of track evolution, how they skim the barriers, how they, you know, for example, at the top of the hill in Casino, the people will see this weekend. There's two zebra crossings, and you always break in between the two zebra crossings, but you can't see anything. It's completely blind. So you just have to get to the top of the hill as quickly as you can. And then you turn in, there's a barrier that sticks out just at the last part of Casino Square before you turn right to go back down the hill towards the hairpin. And you turn in aiming for the barrier at Monaco, because the track doesn't rubber in as quickly as a regular racetrack. So you have to anticipate the fact that the car's going to have some understeer. So you turn in aiming for the barrier, and the understeer from the fact that the track's not rubbered in pushes you wide. And that's something when you're driving, it's just ridiculous. You're turning in aiming for a barrier at whatever it is, 200 odd kilometers an hour, and then just brushing it. It's so good. And I can't stress that enough. I know it's not exciting, but it's so exciting for us. Please don't take it away.
No, I mean, the way you describe it.
All right, fine.
we'll keep Monaco, fine. The way you describe it, I mean, yeah, Monaco is a spectacle. And that's the thing, it's got the historic significance. If you're there in Monaco as well, which I know, obviously, not a lot of people get the chance to do that, but I was lucky enough to go a few years ago for the Formula E, actually, not the F1. But even just being in Monaco, walking around is a bit of a spectacle. It's a weird place to be as well. I remember looking at... Hello. Dogs on the show. They love Monaco.
they're in favor of me, by the way, everyone.
All in favor, bark. But I remember, I was just looking for like a supermarket around Monaco, and I just couldn't find one. I could find Bugatti, I could find Yves Saint Laurent, I could find Chanel, I just couldn't find a supermarché. But that's the whole point of Monaco, is it is a bit of a spectacle, and it kind of comes across on TV a little bit. But equally with my FIA president hat on, Formula E race there. And it's always cracking. It's bonkers because they're smaller cars. They can actually go side by side. They can do a little bit of wheel to wheel. And so make the car smaller and Monaco will be fine. Simple as.
Oh, there we go.
Another thing, though, the TV direction has always been not the best for Monaco because it's been done by the local Monaco team. But this year, it's going to be the first time it's in charge of by F1. So they're finally actually taking control of that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
So would you remember, was it last year or a couple of years ago where there was a great fight between Gasly and I can't remember who it was now, going up to the casino and then they cut away and it was like a replay of Lance Stroll and the replay screen swipes.
Oh, that was my favorite meme ever.
He'd slightly like banged the curb and it was like, right, this is not valid. You've just missed a great like side by side all the way up to the casino.
Stroll disagrees. I'll tell you that for free.
I love the end.
That was his moment.
It was. Speaking of Aston Martin, though, I mean, we can look forward a little bit to Monaco. We've got a couple of minutes left. Alonso has been saying that he reckons victories are possible at places like Monaco, Hungary, Singapore, because although the Aston Martin lacks straight line speed, it is good around the corners. So, Callan, is this his best chance for victory?
I mean, the Red Bull car is dominant. I know Nick's going to love me saying that. It's so good. Like, yeah, it's you watch the onboard of it and it's so nice to drive. And Monaco is a confidence place. The more confidence you have, the faster you go. I would really love to sit here and say it's a chance. I mean, we need a bit of, with the reality, we need a bit of drama, don't we? We need something to happen. We need Max or Checo to have an off weekend, or Fernando to get out the weekend of his life.
We don't need that. It's, you know, let them race.
Yeah. Completely impartial opinions. No, we need some. And Fernando he's on the form of his life at the moment. And if there's ever going to be a place where he can do it, it's definitely there. You know, slow pit stop, something like that, because it is a place where the Red Bulls can't just breeze past people. There is more. There's more strategy involved in overtaking, and there's more that can go wrong. So I'm really hoping, because I just love to see, again, in the purest form of the sport, I want to see the scenes when Fernando Alonso wins again, because I was looking at it. It's been 10 years since his last win.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's been 10 years since his last win. Am I right in that? Is the experts? I mean, I'm an idiot racing driver.
Germany, Hockenheim, 2013?
2013, 2012.
Google it quickly. Google
it's like 10 years. And hang on a minute, I have the statistics somewhere here.
I actually wrote it down because I did the Miami Grand Prix on my Google, and I was like,
somewhere here,
could win this.
In the back of my mind, I definitely have it somewhere
in my file effects.
I should really
furiously scrolling through my phone now, trying to work out when the last time Fernando.
Oh
Alonso
no,
won.
It was Spain, 2013.
Hockenheim,
2012 was his last pole position. I believe
that was the race where the Williams garage caught fire, wasn't it?
Spain. No, that was Spain 2012.
Oh, that was when Maldonado won. That was the year before. Yeah. No, I mean, it's been 10 years. Can you imagine the scenes, the party for Fernando to win after 10 years in Monaco?
That would be mad, wouldn't it?
I would get on a plane because that evening would be exceptional.
Yeah.
Absolutely exceptional.
Well,
it would be amazing, but it's not going to happen, babe.
All right.
Let me dream.
Bring us all back down to earth with that one. Cheers.
It's just I really do genuinely think, and this isn't a contract thing again, I think Red Bull are just going to absolutely smash every single race. They really are, because Adrian Newey is the king.
The one thing that could throw a spanner in the works and make Monaco great is I've just looked at the weather, and although we're a week out, rain.
Rain predicted.
Rain on Sunday, bit of rain on Saturday, bit of rain on Friday, bit of rain on Thursday. Yeah, because it was delayed at the start last year, wasn't it, for ages? But that's the thing, I hate when they delay it and then, you know, it's like, well, we want to see them battle out on the wet track.
Yeah.
All those road markings make for slippery driving, yeah, and I love it. I love it.
And of course, the walls are not far away in Monaco either. Tell you what would be good for Monaco, this new our tyre strategy thing of you know, minimum two stops. That would be, you know, because we don't want a one-stop Monaco, because then that's just going to be boring. It's just going to add on top of it, isn't it? We want a couple of stops at least.
If we can guarantee that Monaco is going to always be in the drizzly weather, then we can keep Monaco forever, I think. Mm.
So again, this is, I feel as the voice of reason for racing drivers, I feel attacked. I don't feel understood.
You are understood.
Monaco in the wet is terrifying though, to be fair. Because of all the lines, the year that I raced it, we had our qualifying with slicks in the wet around Monaco. And it was, I remember getting back to the teams like awning bit, because you're miles away. We were at the tennis club, so you have to do like 2K of driving on the streets to then go through the tunnel and rejoin the circuit to then come through like in all the support categories. And I remember sitting back in the truck after qualifying and being like, that was absolutely ridiculous. So
did
I kind
you say
of agree
you were on slicks?
Yeah, we took a gamble for slicks. So they separate the qualifying into two groups. So you sat watching the qualifying happening, and the first qualifying was on wet, and we were kind of on the cutoff of whether it was slicks or wets. And I was actually racing for Fernando Alonso's junior team at the time, and it was a very new team to the championship. We had very good engineers and very good people, but you know, I kind of rocked up at the weekend, and I was like, have we been around Monaco before? They're like, no. Have we been around a street circuit before? No. Have you got any video? No. Have you got any data? No. I was like, oh, cool. So I've got half an hour to learn the track. That's going to be fun.
It's wet. Let's put some slicks on. Really good.
Well, again, so I took a gamble to try and make something happen because, again, as you said, Monaco is super boring because you can't do anything. And we took a gamble on slicks in the wet, and I think I qualified third or something, but it was in groups, like fifth overall, whatever. But it was like driving around with slicks in the wet in Monaco was absolutely going into turn one and like locking the rears and heading for the outside barrier crossed up. Yeah, we can make it drizzle. This was a very long-winded way of saying, please can it rain this weekend? Because I think there's going to be some absolutely awesome action and some great stuff to look out for if it does.
I think so. We're looking forward to it. What if you're faced with the conundrum Monaco or street race in Cape Town? One or the other?
Don't do that to me.
Do it to him. Do it. You have to answer.
Why can't we do both? I don't
know. No, you're not allowed. No.
It's like asking someone to choose
there's
which
one
child
left,
they love
there's
more.
There's one spot left on the calendar, and it's either Cape Town or Monaco.
Yeah, Sophie's choice. You got to do it.
Oh, why am I so passionate about this? Why is this such a difficult decision?
You have 5 seconds.
Is it a long-term deal?
Yeah.
Well, of course, I'm South African. I'm going to choose Cape Town, aren't I?
Okay.
See, I knew you hated Monaco. I knew it.
I've just completely unraveled all my credibility. I'm going to say that Cape Town would be amazing if it's a long-term deal and we can have a race where people can look up to it. Because the big thing with Monaco is, as I said to you, you start off as a kid in karting and you go, oh, Monaco's cool. And every driver has a memory of watching Monaco and going, I quite like to win around there. That's really nice, isn't it? So if we can make Monaco have the same prestige than Cape Town, if it doesn't, then we keep Monaco on the calendar and we replace it with an irrelevant race that no one cares about so we can have both. And that's my answer. Thank you very much.
Well, all right, then we'll leave it there, shall we?
That was a very safe answer though, wasn't it? That was a very safe answer. No,
well done, Callan. You handled the pressure well. Look, we are just about out of time. So for a no race, post-race podcast, we did manage to fill the time. I hope it was at least of some relevance to you if you're listening. Thank you very much for your company, as always. Stay tuned to WTF on channels throughout the week as we now look forward to Monaco and build up. It'll be Hot Takes Wednesday, and then we'll be back for the post-race Monaco podcast as well. But Nicola Hume, thank you very much
for giving up your time.
Callan O'Keefe, as always, joins myself, Harry Benjamin, for every post-race podcast. We shall see you straight after Monaco. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.